Okay, hello everyone. It's Nathan here. Who do we have on the call tonight?
Hey, Stephen, it's Deborah in North Carolina.
Hey, Deborah.
Hey.
Ron Lee from Wisconsin.
Great.
Hello, it's Cara from San Diego.
Hey, Cara.
Hi.
It's Erin from Fremont, California.
Awesome. Hello.
Sarah from South Carolina.
Great. Hello from South Carolina.
Say your name already. Well, say your name.
Treva from Charlotte.
Hey. Hello.
Hey, Treva.
Hey, how are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Stephen, Mississippi.
Hey, Stephen.
Maria, Gulfport, Mississippi.
Nice. Good, good. All right. Well, if you haven't heard, I'm taking over the call for Larry tonight. Me, Nathan Amaral. I did the call a few weeks ago from Belgium. And Larry's speaking at a group tonight, at a RIA group. So he asked me to fill in and get your questions answered. I believe to just for everyone to know, if you haven't been on the call before, I believe it's *6 mute the phone. I think it is off the top of my head, and that helps reduce any background noise, and it also unmutes the line for questions. But we'll kick it off with some questions. Whoever has what's been going on. If you want to start off by sharing what's been going on in your business and a big question you want to get answered, we'll make it happen.
Hey, Stephen, what's going on with Larry? He hasn't been on the call for several times now, and I don't know who you are, so can you explain who you are?
Sure, absolutely. So, yeah, so my name is Nathan Amaral, and
Nathan. I thought you were saying Stephen. Hey, Nathan, it's Nana.
Oh, okay.
Hey,
my reputation precedes myself.
Hey. Yeah, no, it sounded like you said Stephen, so I'm going, who the hell is Stephen?
Oh, yeah, no, it's Nathan, yeah. Well, and just in case, that's a good point, though. I'll introduce myself just real quick, a little background.
I know
here
who
is,
you are. We talked the other
you know
day.
Who I am? Okay.
Great.
All right, just in case there is anyone else who doesn't know, two-minute bio. I've been investing for 12 years, started out in wholesaling real estate, and did that for a while, and did it for 2 years until I got introduced to a guy who does apartments, David Lindahl up in Boston, and I worked for him for 3 years and got into what I like to call active income, active, not passive. I don't really like the word passive. I like active because to me it comes in every month and it's actively coming in. So, but you know, I got into that whole idea about holding real estate, which is something that I've been, you know, kind of talking a lot about recently and kind of, you know, really bringing that home to a lot of people. Like, it's okay to wholesale real estate. You're going to have deals that you're going to wholesale, but you got to hold for cash flow. That's really important. So did that for a number of years. And then I met Larry about 7 years ago. And this whole concept of doing real estate virtual was very new to me when I met Larry. But I didn't really do anything until about 5 years ago. So I knew Larry for seven. And then I just kind of worked my consulting business for 2 years. And knowing Larry, he really kind of like opened up my mind to doing it virtually. So I did my first virtual deal about 5 years ago, and I did it in South Carolina. I was living in Charlotte, did it in South Carolina, and I just kept doing it after the first deal, and I didn't show up. I never saw the property physically. I never walked the property. Didn't go to closing. I didn't go to the second closing. Everything went fine. And I think on that first deal, I made about $27,000, which was pretty shocking because I didn't think I could do that virtually and all that stuff. So so that just continued. So, you know, then I got into owner financing. And that's pretty primarily what I do, a little bit of wholesaling mostly, and then the rest owner financing. And I used to live in South Carolina. I used to live like right across the street from Larry's office. And I used to work very closely with Larry and his team in his office. But then I just decided in 2013, I moved out of the country, and I moved to Uganda, Africa to be with my wife. My wife is Ugandan, and we started a family. And so now I kind of a little very remote and virtual. Right now I'm currently in Portugal, and I have a vacation rental here that we're doing Airbnb with, and I'm just living in my own rental right now. And enjoying the time here with my family. But yeah, so that's a little bit my background. I've invested in wholesaling, lease options, apartments, land. I own real estate in three different countries now. And now I'm kind of getting my wife involved as well. My wife is, you know, she did her first deal in December, and she's enjoying it. And yeah, we just keep moving along. I'm also, you know, I used to work directly in Larry's office, but I'm also one of Larry's, his coach, his main real estate coach. You know, whenever someone comes into the phone coaching program, he has a few different programs where some people go out to his office. And then there's a phone coaching program, which I'm the real estate coach for that. I do the phone coaching there. And I also do the hometown mentorship, which is where I fly out to the student's location for 3 days. And I help them build their team, and I work with them right there in their office, kind of get them ready, build a power team locally. Those are really powerful sessions because I show them how to build a power team right there with the people around them, the agent, the mortgage broker, the real estate attorney. And I handle all the conversations and the student watches, and that's always a groundbreaking thing. I kind of duplicate what my coach taught me 12 years ago to actually help me do deals to get started. So. Yeah, so that's a little bit about my background, and you know, I do real estate about 20% of the time, and 80% of the time is consulting because it's my unique ability. It's what I'm good at. And whenever I do real estate, I don't look at properties. I actually have a system where people bring me the deals, but when I do real estate, my unique ability is negotiating and being on the phone. So I'll get on the phone with the seller. And I'll do a renegotiation, and also selling the property. Those are my unique abilities, and I bring that up. And I guess I could start to call that way is find your unique ability in your business, because when you just operate in your unique ability, what your power strength is, then it makes the rest of the business a lot easier. I personally am not good at I'm not good at finding deals. On the front end, like searching for them and all that stuff. So, so I have a system in place, which I shared on the previous call, that makes that happen. So that's a little about my background. I'd like to open it up and answer some questions. So whoever wants to go first, jump right in.
Hey, Nathan, this is Deborah Kennard in Matthews. We've talked a lot. And I just got a question.
Yes. Hi, Deborah.
Hey. Can you elaborate on what's working for you in today's market to best generate leads, to get deals, what you're doing, you know, like now to find deals?
Mm-hmm. Sure. Absolutely. That's a great question.
You say you're not good at finding deals. So how are you finding deals?
that's a great question. And I'll tell you what, when I say I'm not I don't want to say I'm not good at it, because let me tell you, when I first started my wholesaling business, I literally, how I got introduced to the business, wasn't what it was today. And the way I learned the real estate business, it was very door-to-door, face-to-face. It was driving for dollars. I didn't do any direct mail at the time. I did a lot of direct mail. How I built my cash buyer list was my coach told me to call all the for rent. I lived in a very apartment heavy saturated market. So there was a lot of duplexes, quads, and all that stuff. The way I built cash buyers was my coach said, you're going to call every for rent ad in the newspaper, and you're going to call and talk to the landlord, and you're going to ask them if they're interested in buying properties. And that's how I built my cash buyer list. So the wholesaling and how I built my business then, I was my own boots on the ground, took pictures and all that. Today, I know, like, that's how I had to learn the business. But today, that stresses me out. It really does. I start feeling very stressed out. I actually got to a point in my business. I ended up in the hospital with acid reflux. I was on the purple pill, the Nexium pill, just because of that stress. It was stressing me out, and I didn't know why. I didn't know until I was throwing up blood, literally, and went into the hospital, and the doctor asked me a bunch of questions through those questioning, that it was the real estate on the front end that was stressing me out. And so I had to pull back. So unfortunately for me, it was a health issue that I had to correct myself. But I'll tell you what, to find deals in the real estate, in our business, and what we do, I don't care if you're wholesaling, it doesn't matter what it is, lease options or, you know, the best lead is a motivated seller. That's the best lead, okay? And if you can put yourself in the mindset of a motivated seller, and what they do, what they look for, let's just separate the two between motivated seller and a retail seller, right? A retail seller is more than likely going to work with an agent. They want top dollar. They're willing to let the property sit. They're willing to put some extra money into it and listen to what the agent has to say to get that property up to par, right? So they want to get top dollar. Motivated seller might not even be thinking about selling their property, but they have to because of a life situation. So you have to start thinking of what would they look for. And I bet if anyone, and I'm sure this goes across the board here with anyone on this call, if you literally pick up any course that you have on wholesaling, you will find the marketing that you need to do to attract a motivated seller. And if you do not have some quick ideas, I can definitely email anyone on this call. You can send me an email to Nathan, which is Nathan at LarryGoins.com. So that's Nathan. You can email me, and I will send you like 50 quick ideas to help you find motivated sellers. One of the most, I would say, powerful ways right now, Deborah, has been classified ads. And this is the kind of the part that I was referencing earlier that I'm personally would stress me out. But it may come naturally to someone else who on the call, other people who are listening. When you're looking for properties that are on classified ads, it's a lot of searching. It's a lot of looking for people who are trying to sell their home, and they're not going to use a realtor. So you have to think of the motivated seller as, where are they going to post their home if they're not going to use an agent? They may not know about Zillow for sale by owner through Zillow. They may not know forsalebyowner.com. Some people do, some people don't. But a lot of people just use classified ads. And I say classified ads in a general sense because not everybody uses Craigslist. But for anyone who doesn't know, actually, Craigslist probably is the number – well, first of all, for traffic, for website traffic, Craigslist is the number one for website traffic in classified ads. And I bet you a lot of people don't know that Craigslist probably sells with quotations, the most real estate. I bet you most investors use Craigslist to buy or sell real estate. And I think the most transactions happen through Craigslist. I can think right off the top of my head that probably the past 10 deals I've done in the past few months have been through Craigslist only through Craigslist, pretty much. Whether my deal hunter found it or my VA data scraped, the market that we were investing in and found the lead. But I have to say it's all been through Craigslist because I personally don't do yard signs. I used to, but I don't. But here's to answer that question even deeper, Deborah, is this. There are a few different strategies you can do. Like I'm going to say property sourcing or marketing strategies to attract the motivated seller, but you have to test which one is best for you. If I was to rattle off like a list of 10, that could be direct mail, That could be yard signs. That could be referral marketing. Some people do door hangers. Some people use some people buy, pay-per-click marketing online. Right, I could just go down the list of how we're going to find these motivated sellers. Web scraping on Craigslist. Right, we could just go down the list here, but you can't do all of those ways all at the same time, but you have to identify at least 1 to 3 ways that you're going to say, "Hey, this is how I'm going to find my motivated sellers. This is the marketing that I'm going to do to acquire those leads." And literally, you could pop open any wholesaling course, and the marketing piece is right there. They're right there. They're in almost every wholesaling course out there. So I hope, does that answer your question? Like,
yeah, it's a lot to think about, but what would be your top five?
My top five? Okay, so first of all, I know I mentioned this before, but I use Deal Hunters. So I have people on a commission-only basis who go looking, and they go looking on Craigslist. So I'm going to say my number one is Craigslist. And then to whether it's a Deal Hunter or if it's a virtual assistant scraping Craigslist to bring me the leads, that's classified sites. It would be Craigslist, Backpage, Oodle. And also I work the North Carolina market and South Carolina market. So there are some classified sites within the market. See, like Craigslist is the general, like the big, classified of them all. But then there's other classified within each state. For example, Cleveland, Ohio has Cleveland classifieds. And that's a whole different area of classified than Craigslist in Cleveland. So consider that. Don't just think Craigslist only. There's also the other places online, other classified sites that you could have your VA data scrape the marketing for you. Craigslist, my number one. Number two is my team, my Deal Hunters. You should also consider Bird Dogs. Bird Dogs is a very simple way to, it's a small fee, $500 to $1,000 to acquire a deal. They can be your eyes and ears. If you don't want to be out there in your market, then you can get Bird Dogs pretty easily. You could actually post something on Craigslist for a Bird Dog, and you'd get people to do it. I'll tell you what, I know Larry, I think it was about maybe 3 years ago, He did a 3,000 sign campaign. He put out 3,000 signs in North and South Carolina, and he ran the sign that said Gabby buys houses. And what he did was he hired people to put out every sign was $1. Every sign that person put out was $1. And actually, some of those people he turned into Bird Dogs. Actually, some of those people ended up bringing him deals. Some people were just putting out signs, and other people weren't. In that top five, I would definitely say yard signs, bandit signs. I have to, because those do work in some markets. They really do. And you can use them both for building a cash buyer list, and you can use them for, attracting motivated sellers. But yard signs really do, they still work. They've been working for as long as I've been in real estate, I've always heard about them. So they do work. I definitely in that top five list is direct mail for sure. Just the only thing I have to say, I work with a lot of students all over the country, and every market's a little bit different. And there's some markets that are very, very saturated. And that means it would be a seller's market, and the property owner, the seller, is getting multiple offers and actually probably getting more than what they're asking for. In those markets, usually doing direct mail is not a good idea. It's because it's just so hot that everyone's pretty going to work with a realtor to get top dollar for their property. Even junk properties would be working through a realtor to get top dollar, to get as much as they can. So I would say just be careful with the really busy seller market. because those are probably not good places to be doing direct mail for wholesaling. So that would be my top five.
Thank you.
Sure.
Nathan, I have a question. Go ahead.
You want to go first, and I'll go next. That's fine.
Okay. Hey, this is Sarah. I'm in South Carolina. I have a question about doing this virtually online. In working wholesale deals in the South Carolina area, I've had situations where we've gotten houses under contract that we had a hard time selling, or stuff where a number of things I looked at online, I talked with the realtor about it, things looked good in the pictures, and then I went and looked at the house, and it was terrible. It was all kinds of stuff that, you know, it just looked so much prettier in the pictures than it did in real life. And so I've wondered about this, that I've, you know, if I have a hard time finding the deal or selling a deal that I can see face-to-face, if it looks so much different from the pictures, how do you do such a good job of judging your deal when you're just looking online, or, you know, when you can't actually see it?
That's a great question, and I'm not trying to offend anyone. If anyone is an agent on the phone, on the line, or anything like that, I'm not offending. I'm just bringing out a truth and a reality. Every broker, because you mentioned you're finding that property through an agent, right? When you're dealing with agents, first of all, they're commission-only salespeople, commission-only brokers, okay? So when you're presenting a property or a product and you want to get bodies into the property to go look at it, you're gonna put your best foot forward, especially online. You're probably not going to show every picture. Right. I'll give you an example. I had a gentleman, I was down in Alabama, and he had me come out, did a hometown mentoring, and he found this property. It was on realtor.com. And when I looked at the price and the value of the area, I was like, okay, looking at it, I was like, wow, this is a pretty good deal. Like this could be a slamming deal. But when looking at the pictures, I'm like, okay, I noticed things that the student didn't notice. He was really excited because he knew that the value was there. And I said, okay. So I said, you know what? Let's go look at this property. It's not too far away. We'll call the agent. We'll go look at it. It'll be part of our lesson. So we go look at the property. And the funny thing is, when we get in, every room, I'm not kidding you, every room in that house, there was about a foot or a 3 foot gap in every ceiling in that house, in the entire house. Every room in the ceiling, there was like either a hole or like some big gap or something like that, like pieces of the ceiling missing. When I looked back at the pictures, I literally opened up my computer while I was there with the student and the realtor, and I looked and I showed him all the pictures. Not one of the pictures showed the ceiling in any of the rooms, right? And so the realtor was basically trying to say, oh, you know, this is only going to cost so much and all that stuff, right? Trying to kind of say it's not so bad. So you have to understand first when dealing with realtors, if they're trying to move a property, their whole goal is to get you in the property first. Kind of like a car salesman wants to take you from the lot into the car. Once he can get you seated in the car, he knows he has a better chance of you buying the deal. So the thing is that you have to, when you put something under contract and you do your inspection, you have your inspection done, you can't just go off the pictures, right? So let me kind of just flow through the process here. If you're working with an agent, put the property under contract, then go look at the property. Then whether it's you or someone in your team goes and inspects the property, okay? So first it comes the contract, get it accepted. Then your team does the inspection or yourself. And that's when you can actually go and get the real pictures of the property. Does that make sense?
So, but if you're doing something, like you're in South Carolina and you're doing something in another state, how do you go and look at it, obviously? Or if, you know, you're in, you know.
Sure.
Or if you're in Portugal and you're trying to buy a property.
Exactly. I'll give you a perfect example. So there was a property that I had under contract. And it was in North Carolina. This was like 3 weeks ago. And it was in North Carolina. What I have to do, now I didn't have a direct contact in that local area at the moment, so I had to find someone from a local RIA group or anything like that. That's typically what I do. I'll tell you what I do, but you can find someone in that area that will go and look at it. Now, you could get what there's a term in the industry called boots on the ground, right? It's just basically like get eyeballs out there to go look at it. You could get a realtor to go take pictures and video. I highly recommend video, pictures and video. You could get a bird dog to go be that person for you. You would need someone to get out there. So the properties that I buy in South Carolina, I don't physically don't go out there. So I either have a deal, what I call a deal hunter, or you could have a bird dog go do it for you. They don't mind looking at taking pictures of properties for like $25, maybe $50, whatever it is, whatever you negotiate. You could have sometimes contractors can do it for you, you know, if you have a good relationship with one, or you can get an agent that you would want to build a relationship who would go take pictures. Now, just be careful, in my opinion, with agents. They usually like to price that stuff a little bit higher, typically around like they want $100 to go, you know, look take pictures. And I just think that's too much. Bird dogs are really good for that kind of stuff as well. You know, they're already driving around looking for properties, you know, and so that's something you can do. You could easily, in your market, no matter where you are in South Carolina or wherever you're investing out of state, you could easily run ads online and that for a person in that market and just find someone that's willing to get out there and take pictures. And then you can pay them whatever you negotiate.
And what do you tend to pay them? And do you do that up front or do you do it only when deals close or what's kind of normal?
That's a good question. Normal is the tough part there. I've seen people have contractors do it. Typically, like, I think the average I've heard, I'm just going to go off the average. I've seen typically like $25 to $50 to get out there and go take pictures. There are also property service companies, which will charge about $65, but they do a little bit more. If you want to write that down, a property service company, they're usually about $65. They'll go to the property. They'll take about 100 pictures, but then they put it in a little report. The report takes them a bit more time, so they're usually a little bit more expensive, around $65, okay? So I would say anywhere between $25 to $50, and, yeah, you're probably going to have – you're going to pay them probably after they get you the results, after they give you the goods, you know, the pictures and the videos. Because if you're paying a bird dog to drive over there in their time, you're probably going to end up paying that up front. Yeah. But remember, this is after you get the property under contract. This isn't before you have the property under contract.
Nathan, Larry gave us a there's two places, and I forget what the one is, but the other place is called We Go Look.
Yep.
And he gave us that information at the last conference I was at.
Yep.
And you pay them to go look. And I'm sure it's after they give you the pictures and you see that, you know, they actually went there. And they
probably
set up some kind of a PayPal or something. But that's how to get it. It's called WeGoLook.com or something.
Yeah, you're exactly right. WeGoLook is one of those companies. They're a property service company. They go out there and they do all kinds of pictures and reports, actually. They'll do it for properties. They do it for cars, all kinds of scenarios. But yeah, so WeGoLook is one of those companies. There's a few out there, but WeGoLook has a big national presence. Absolutely. Yep. And, what they basically do is they hire people for like, you know, whatever, $25, they hire people and they're the middleman. They're connecting you to people who go take pictures. They're like the middle broker. So you could run ads yourself or you could use a company like WeGoLook. Absolutely. Does that help?
Hey, Nathan, it's Mark from Rhode Island. How are you?
Hey, Mark from Rhode Island. What part of Rhode Island?
Smithfield, buddy. We talked, I think, a while ago, maybe like 6 months, 8 months, something like that. We've talked briefly, though.
Yeah, man.
So I know this is
you go into
up in your neck of the woods.
Oh, my gosh. I used to be at the Rhode Island RIA group. That's where I was, like, big. I was like known for doing all these wholesale deals. I was the youngest guy there. That's where David Lindahl picked me up. He came and spoke there, and that's where he saw me.
Yep.
And we met. And, yeah, man, that's awesome. So you turning and burning up there or what?
Well, you know, I have real estate already. I have some, you know, apartments and that kind of thing. But, you know, looking to expand, as you know, right now, I mean, I'm not finding much in the way of apartment buildings to buy right now. That's why I'm doing the whole – trying to do the wholesaling anyway because I'm not finding much in the way of properties. So, you know how it goes. Maybe we could talk about that again too. But I was actually going to ask you – I know we talked to Larry. We were looking at mainly like Zillow, you know, to find properties because, you know, of course, HUD Home Store, but you have to have an inside line, have an agent that's willing to – submit deals for you all the time, all and every day, and I guess, you know, you almost have to have a realtor in the inside pocket to get that to happen as far as what I've seen so far. So, you know, as far as Zillow goes, I haven't been having much luck, you know, finding too many deals. I've had a couple deals, you know, where I got accepted offers, but it wound up not being a property that was going to actually show, you know, profit at the end of it because there was just too much money that had to go into it. But, so my question is, you know, as far as Craigslist ad goes, you say that. I mean, you're not even – are you using Zillow at all?
No. No.
No, I think so.
I think we found – yeah. I know some people that do. We just personally don't. Now, I have sold – actually, I had a closing last week that property we put on Zillow. You know, we were holding it for like 2 months, couldn't sell it on Craigslist, but then we put it on Zillow. And then we got a buyer, so that was great. And that came from Zillow, so I was pretty surprised about that because I just don't really use Zillow that much for looking for deals like that. You know, so to answer your question, like, you know, do I use Zillow for? I would say the only part you're going to use Zillow for, in my opinion, for motivated sellers, is the for sale by owner part. That's really where you're gonna, you know, find them. And if you want to use it to sell it, they offer it that for free. And I think one of the best things that Zillow is doing right now, which is really gonna shake up the industry, if you want to look into this, if you haven't seen it yet, Zillow is coming out with instant offers. Have you heard about that?
No,
I haven't. Nope.
Okay, so Zillow is an amazing game changer, by the way. They're really powerful. And if you didn't know this, but Zillow actually owns Trulia. They bought Trulia I think 2014 or something like that. So they bought Trulia and they kept them both separate because of marketing purposes. Some people are more attracted to green, other people are attracted to blue, but the data and everything's pretty much the same and it's the same company. So they kept it separate. Okay. And that's an important thing to remember in marketing and business because people are attracted to different things. So Zillow already launched, but it hasn't, it's not on everyone's dashboard yet per se. They've done a beta test and everything, but they're coming out with instant offers. You can actually Google this and check it out on YouTube and stuff. Actually, if you look it up on YouTube, you're probably going to see a lot of pissed off agents. And the reason why is Zillow instant offers takes the agent out of the picture. Now, in my opinion, is a beautiful thing. And again, I have nothing against agents. I have an agent on my power team. But when you want to work with a seller directly, and if you're an investor, then and the seller is willing to take offers directly, then let's play. Let's do it. Let's go for it. And Zillow is really launching this instant offer because it takes out the agent, it saves that money there, and it puts the power of the buyer and seller together, and then Zillow is just bringing two people together, which is the future, by the way. In the next 3 to 5 years, California is really, really focused on this and doing this. I know we have some people on here from California, and they're already doing things to remove, like, the agent out of the picture in technology companies. They're doing things where the lockboxes are wireless, and they can be unlocked by the buyer just showing up there and making things happen on their phone. And also even closings they're doing virtually, you know. So things like that are happening, and we're probably going to see that pick up more and more in the coming years. Like literally in the next 3 years, you'll see, you know, probably more agents not, you know, leaving the industry, or there won't be as many agents in the industry as much anymore because of the technology revolution.
Right.
Wow.
So at the end of the day, you're not using Zillow to find deals. You're not using HUD Home Store to find deals. you're using Craigslist or other classified ads mostly to find deals, wholesale deals.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, to find motivated sellers. To touch on what you said about HUD Store, if you're buying HUD deals, here's the thing. To streamline that process, Larry has a book about it, HUD, you know, how he buys HUD, you know, 30, 50% off and how he puts all these offers out in HUD. Here's the secret to that. And because I worked directly with Larry to help him, you know, I was in the office every day. We built that puppy up. One, you need a flexible, or I would say investor friendly agent that has the NID number. It's a very simple application. You can get it right on the HUD Store. But the idea is you have virtual assistants log in and make that happen. Don't get me wrong, you could have the agent do it. Yes. But I think I heard it in your voice earlier where you're like, man, what agent's going to want to submit that many offers a day, you know, to make
that happen? I experienced it. I mean, I tried to, you know, sweet talk on them, and I had one started to do it, and she did it for like a few, you know, a week or so, and she's like, you know what, I'm not going to do this anymore. I'm like, okay.
Right. So. Yeah. Yeah, so the secret to that part, when Larry talks about that and doing multiple offers a day and bidding all the time, that's virtual assistants kicking in. So basically you get an agent that's willing to let you use the number, you know, the number and log in and the virtual assistants do it.
Right. Yep, I knew about that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And just to, because I know this is coming up quite a bit, but I'll tell you what. This goes down, I think, Sarah in South Carolina, this comes up for you as well because you said you were holding on to a deal. If you reverse the system, okay, which what I mean by that is if you find the money first, the cash buyer, since we're talking about wholesaling, if you find the cash buyers first and work on building your cash buyer list, you can know exactly where to go look for properties and then go straight to that market. And I'll give you an example. Recently, I switched from Jacksonville, North Carolina to Fayetteville, North Carolina, simply because of margin. The profit margin in Jacksonville was drying up a little bit. It was shrinking slowly month after month. So I said, let me switch over to Fayetteville. Same model, just a different area. And but the margins were still good. The profit margins were still good. So one of the first things I did in Fayetteville is I didn't go looking for property, is I went looking for the cash buyer. And the reason why is because once you know where the cash buyer wants to buy, once you know what they're looking for, when's the last time they bought a property, how much do they typically buy a property for? Like, do they usually buy a property for $200,000 or $100,000? What's their price range? How much capital do they have? Once you work with a cash buyer first, then you know where to go make offers. And then you can concentrate your marketing in and around that area. So, for example, in Fayetteville, I started building a cash buyer list there first. And then I was able, that's how I would do it in any market if I'm wholesaling, is you build a cash buyer list first so that you know where most of like the rehabs are happening, where are they buying deals, what side, because the cash buyer will tell you literally on the phone, they'll tell you, they're like, oh no, I don't buy in that area because of this and this, I like this area. And you just kind of keep asking them the question to build a cash buyer list, and they'll you do that, it'll be a lot easier to find the deal. You know what I mean? You'll know where to go to find the deal. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah, so hopefully that helps.
Hey, wouldn't the cash buyer in that area already be looking for the deals in that area that he already wants to buy in?
Not necessarily.
You know, yeah. Well, yeah. This comes up quite a bit, and I'm gonna bring this up right now because I know I'm gonna just kind of like debunk the whole myth about cash buyers. I'm gonna give you some real life scenarios. And I know because it seems like, oh, they have money, so they must know what they're doing, right? It almost kind of feels that way, like, oh, they're the buyer. They have the $100,000. I'm just using $100,000 as an example, or they have the $50,000. Doesn't matter the money amount, but they have the $100,000. They must know what they're doing, so they must have people bringing them deals all the time. not true at all. Actually, I bet you most of the time, if you didn't know this, most of the time your cash buyers, they could be first-time investors. They could be rehabbers that maybe they just started rehabbing on their second house and both of them didn't make them any money or made them maybe a few thousand dollars and they're not too happy about it. It could be a cash buyer who has never done a real estate deal before, never did a rehab. Maybe they watched a few shows on TV. They have a bunch of money in their account and they're like, all right, I'm going to go buy some property, right? Okay, there's another situation. So I just want you to, in your mind, I just want you to debunk this myth that goes on that I hear quite often. I want you to debunk this myth that you that these cash buyers know everything. Now, don't get me wrong. There are some guys that do. They do this for a living. Like they're on their 50th deal. They're on their 100th deal. Yeah, those are called sophisticated investors. And they're pretty familiar. But here's the thing with sophisticated investors. They don't always want to go hunt for the deal. They want to go from job after job after job. Like they want to go from project to project to project. They don't always want to be the one to spend the time to find the deal. Again, this goes back to unique abilities. A rehabber, a contractor may not be good at finding good deals, or maybe they don't want to spend the time. You know, I'm working with a student actually right now that has a cash buyer and has a cash buyer list, and they've done 30 deals in so far this year. They've done 30 deals, but you know what they said to my student? They said, we don't want to spend the marketing dollars anymore. We want to find different sources. So we're going to look for, like, we're going to look for other wholesalers to find deals, right? So some cash buyers are just maybe transitioning. Maybe they don't want to hunt for deals anymore. They want the deals to come to them instead of them go looking for them. Maybe they don't want to market for them. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Thanks.
Yeah. So please keep that in mind. And cash buyers don't always know what they're doing. They don't. I can actually think about four scenarios. Two in my mind are very, you know, I had a cash buyer and, you know, they did a rehab and they're stuck, you know, and they bought the property wrong, right? But they're going to do another rehab, right? But it's just part of the business. People, you know, cash buyers are only human. They make mistakes. So please don't think that every cash buyer, you know, knows everything that they're doing all the time. And the ones that do, and if they sound sophisticated or they have the results, you heard about them, they've done a lot of deals, those are great also. Those are people that you can say, okay, what are you looking for? How often do you buy? You know, what is the part of your business that you don't like, right? What's the part, if I'm working with a cat, you know, there's, I'll give you two questions that I always ask every, whether I'm raising private money, whether I'm dealing with a hard money lender, whether I'm dealing with a cash buyer, I always like to ask these questions because it opens up the conversation, you know, gets things going. I like to ask, what was your best day in real estate? What was your best day in real estate? And what was your worst day in real estate? When I'm talking to a cash buyer, in this example, when I'm building a relationship, I don't want to always just talk about numbers. But I want to get to know the cash buyer, especially if they've done a lot of deals or they're just building that relationship. I like to ask them what was their best or worst day. And the reason why I do that is because in this business, it's such a relationship business. You don't just want it all to be about numbers. You want to build trust, right? You want to be able to, when you get a property under contract, you build your buyers list. And you may have a list of 100 buyers, but the reality is, you're only going to probably have about 10 solid ones. And those 10 out of the 100, you should be pretty close to. Like, you should be knowing what they want and talking to them often and not just doing the whole transactional relationship. Does that make sense?
Nathan, I have some questions about HUD.
Sure.
Okay, great. So I just started doing some HUD offers. I've read Littery's book, and literally just this week I've done about 40 offers. I've got an agent that's a friend of mine, so I've got her her NAID number, so I can get on there myself. So I just plugged away and did about 40 offers. So now I'm in South Carolina, and I've started just using the numbers that Larry recommends in his book, where he says, mm-hmm. You know, on a single-family home, start at 30% and keep making offers until you get up to 40%. And my first obvious, and it's kind of a dumb question, but I'm thinking Larry is in here doing all the same offers on all the same houses that I'm doing because he's in the same market. And maybe you're doing that too. And you know, he's probably got disproportionately large number of students in the area because he lives here. And yeah. So are these numbers really going to work eventually? I mean, of course, I haven't gotten anything off my 40 offers yet, but I figured, you know, we just keep running the numbers. And I'm doing it myself until I really understand the ins and outs of it, and then my plan is to get a VA to do it. But do I need to adjust my numbers, or, I mean, what's realistic here?
Are they not giving you counters? Are they not countering back? I'm getting a lot of counters now.
Oh, I get a ton of counters, and the counters are all way higher than my offer.
Oh, okay.
You know, and I'm also getting stuff, I don't know if you get this, but they're saying HUD has set a minimum acceptable net to HUD offer amount of whatever XYZ, and it's way more than what I would offer. So should I keep bidding on those properties, or what is all this? What does that mean?
It depends on what you're doing. It depends on whether you're going to do owner financing. Are you looking for the big spread, or you're just going to hold it?
Honestly, right now, I literally just was running the numbers that Larry recommended in his book. I mean, it's literally my first week doing this. And he said, start with these percentages, and then you'll won't get many deals. But when you get them, they're so good, you know you can make a lot of money off of them. So, anyhow, so Nathan, what were your thoughts as far as?
Well, you know what? You know, HUD has made some adjustments in their numbers. They're trying to get more. They're trying to get more money for the deals, right? So Larry in his book is talking about pretty much the 70% rule. Your goal is to get the property as an investor. Your goal in wholesaling is to get the property 30 to 50% below. Of course, you can get it over 50%, but typically the range is 30 to 50% below market value, right? So that's the goal in wholesaling real estate. So With some of the changes that are happening, and, you know, even I remember in North and South Carolina when Larry was there was a boatload of HUD opportunities. I don't know what the numbers are right now, but there was a whole bunch of inventory in HUD. And then that just kind of slowly died down, and then it went back up. And that can just be with the amount of inventory that's in the market. With HUD making some changes, you're going to have to adjust to the market. So it's great that you're getting that experience. It's great that you're getting that experience and you're making those offers, but you're probably going to have to adjust some of your numbers to what HUD's looking for, especially if they're setting a minimum bar, right? If they're setting a minimum bar now, you know, they're basically making a declaration to say, hey, you know, this is the minimum right here.
Okay, and so if their minimum is still quite a bit higher than what we'd want, just don't even worry about that property. Just move on.
Yeah.
Is what you're saying.
Yeah, exactly. And to go back to your other question about everyone making offers in that area, you know, I hear this all the time, like, oh, what about competition and other people? You know, the reality is, I don't want to say it's magic, but the reality is there's always, in any market, there's always investors making offers, but the seller is just going to go with the offer that sounds or feels the best. I wish I could say there's no guarantee there. You could have a flooded market with investors and they're all doing, let's say, direct mail, and the seller gets 10 postcards in a week. And literally the seller wants to sell the house and they literally just randomly pick a postcard unless a wholesaler is doing direct mail. Yard signs. Let's look at that again, right? Yard signs. The motivated seller can randomly pick any sign, right? So the important thing is marketing, prospecting, and getting the leads, getting the motivated sellers. That's important. And building that, you know, being in front of them with your marketing, and then you potentially get that deal. You know, you don't really want to change the formula, but you want to remain active so that you get the opportunity.
Yeah, you're spot on with that, Nathan. You want to get the opportunity. And I've heard people, I got one for $42 and ended up selling it for $119. But
yeah,
they were asking like $46. So somebody, actually it was at Larry's conference up in Phoenix, said, oh, well, I'd only offer $25. I said, well, good. You won't get the deal. I got the deal,
right,
and I'm going to make the profit.
Right, right. Exactly. That's,
it depends on what your
perfect
upside is. The way I'm looking at
yep
it, and I'm old, I'm going to be 67, and flunked every math class there was, but I look at the upside.
Mm-hmm.
So if I get something, we have one in Jacksonville right now that we got for, that
mm-hmm
one was somewhere around 50-something. It's on the market for 99. All I did was paint and carpet. Done.
Yep.
So,
yep,
you know, and they had the minimum. But I looked at the upside for,
right,
for something
right
like that. And we're closing on one in Texas this week
mm-hmm
that we got for 42, but it's going to go on the market for 99, paint and carpet,
right,
that's it.
Right.
So
and
I could have passed them all up because they weren't the price that I felt that I should have paid, but I also wouldn't have made the profit. So if you have
right
something, the way I've kind of scaled it down is, if I'm getting something for 40 and I can do seller financing for 69 and the area will take that, I'm good. But
right
if I want the big profit, then I'm going to pay more for the house.
Right. Yeah. And you bring up a good point, because that is going to depend on the exit strategy. Like you're saying, the upside,
right,
like what's the exit strategy? So if
exactly
someone is doing owner financing, then you have to look at the number. You, in owner financing, for example, you actually might pay more. For example, to add on to that, you know, there was a house in Fayetteville that was a VA house, and the values were like, was it 120? I think it was the property was brand new, didn't need anything, like not brand new, but it was super clean, didn't need anything at all. Everything's ready to go. $45,000 VA.
Wow.
But you had to come in highest and best. You know, it was a battle. So there are, and if you're like, again, that my exit strategy with that was going to be, and I didn't even win the bid, but my, the exit strategy was going to be owner financing. So you have to know going in to, before you go into the deal, what your strategy is going to be, the exit
right
strategy to get your profit. Yeah, absolutely.
Right, and if you're borrowing money to buy it, the best option
mm-hmm
on that is to get the heck out of it as fast as possible. You don't want to do owner financing if you're carrying a hard money loan.
Yeah, and well, for owner, I think I mentioned this on the previous call, but you know, if you're going to do owner financing and you're going to borrow the funds or you're going to raise capital, I'd recommend private money.
Right.
You know, and I've done that. I've done that countless, I don't even know, I lost count how many times I've done that. But I enjoy the private money because you have a lot more flexibility and you can get longer term, cheaper rates and all that. But
right.
But yeah, so yeah, with that, you'd probably want to use private money. I think on the previous call, I mentioned how I use private money for a deal. I didn't use any of my own money. We found the deal on Craigslist. I picked it up. We picked it up for 40. It was listed for 65. Okay.
Uh-huh.
We picked it up for 40. The man owed, just wanted to get out of the house. He owed $38,000. We didn't know that at first. It was like $38,900. Okay. He owed that to the bank. The man just wanted to get rid of the property. He's like, please just take it off my hands. Right. So he had it listed for 65. My deal hunter negotiated down. We got it for 40. And then, but the house was worth 110.
Beautiful.
All it needed. Yeah, it's a beautiful deal. Now, here's the funny part. I got into the deal. I didn't use any of my own money. I got money back at closing. I got borrowed funds because that makes it tax-free. So I got borrowed funds at closing, and then we turned around, and then we sold the deal again. Total everything, you know, was a $36,000 profit with no money out of my pocket. Took two
right
months
you flipped
to close
it
everything back and forth. Yeah. But no money out of my pocket, total capital investment. Now, the some of the people may be thinking, well, how the heck do you do that? You know, to address that on the, to address that deal on this call is relationships. Just kind of just bring it right back relationships. You mm-hmm. have to have good relationships in real estate to kind of get those, you know, private money lenders to believe, you know, to trust you, to be in the deal. And that's really what this business is about, is building relationships with people.
Right, for sure.
Hey, this is Brandy. I have a question in reference to private money. I have some lenders
sure.
who are willing, well, not lenders, but private money lenders who are willing to work with me, but they don't know what they're doing and neither do I. So my biggest question is, what am I giving them to secure their interest if they're not giving me a large sum of money? I don't necessarily want to put them on the deed to a property.
Well, how much money do they have?
For example, I have three right now who are each telling me they can give me $10,000.
Okay.
So if I have three separate people, then, you know, that I don't want to have a deed of trust with four names on it.
No.
So are there some other options to that?
Yeah, there is different options. But you don't, if you're dealing with people with smaller amounts, you could, I've seen a few people do it in different ways. You could set up a partnering LLC and have everyone do the money, but that's going to require, that's because that's a pooled security. You're going to need to get, I believe it's Section D, whenever you're pooling money for security. You need to be filed with the SEC for that. But in my opinion, if they could either hold the money and get a little bit more, or you could position them differently in a deal. I'll give you an example. When someone has about $10,000, or if they're under $20,000, typically, what I'll do is I'll sell them a note. And this is something just I do. It's not, you know, if they want to be involved with you, but they don't really have a lot for purchase or for, you know, purchase rehab or anything like that. If you're doing like something like owner financing, you could have them buy a part of a note from you. But yeah, it's great you have the private money, but you're just going to have to kind of set the bar for a minimum. And most of the time, you know, you probably want to keep them all separate. That's probably going to be, you can get some counsel on that. You can talk to a real estate attorney, and you know, the structure of that entity, would have to be, done in a way where everyone's got interest in the property. You're basically, their security would be the real estate, but you'd have to structure it in a way where it'd be like almost like a business partnership. Does that make sense?
Right. So I'm going for not necessarily for that particular property, but more of like just a partnership deal.
Yeah, and it would have to be where the only way people are going to get their interest would be through an entity structure. So you could talk to a real estate attorney, and they would advise you on how to structure that. It can be done. I've done it before, but you'd want the counsel of a real estate attorney to kind of tell you how to structure that, especially with smaller amounts of money.
Okay, thank you.
Sure. All right. Well, let's try to go for two more questions.
Can you explain more what you mean when you say you have you use Craigslist and you have your VA data scrape Craigslist looking for stuff? And then you were also saying Zillow you just use to find for sale by owners, but Craigslist, you're doing the same thing on Craigslist, right? You're looking for FSBOs
right.
on Craigslist? Okay.
Right, correct. Yeah, it'd be the same thing. Yeah, what I do is there are people who are very talented in what's called data scraping or data mining. And what they do is, especially, so if you're in the real estate niche and you're looking for properties in a particular market, you would tell the VA to say, hey, I'm looking for this. You give them your criteria, right? The property, three bedroom, whatever you're giving them, three bed, two bath, 1,200 square foot in this market, in this area, bam, geographically this area. And any properties that come up that is not associated with an agent, please send them to me every day, every 3 days, however often you want it. Now, here's the good thing. If you go online and you go to websites like Upwork.com, that's U-P-W-O-R-K, Upwork.com, Freelancer.com. Personally, I like to use Upwork.com. I think there's the most, it's the most easiest user-friendly platform, freelancer platform out there. If you go to Upwork.com and you look, you type in real estate assistant and you kind of funnel through some of the people, there's filters there. You're going to want to use those filters to refine your search, to make it narrow down your search. Here's what I would look for in a VA's profile. Make sure they're already doing what you need them to do. Okay? Don't hire a VA that is not familiar with it. Okay? What you want to do is just hire a VA that is already familiar and already doing this, the exact thing you want them to for already someone else. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and can you give me some phrases or words or what you're looking for, what I want to look for when I go on Upwork and I look for them?
Absolutely.
Like what kind of stuff is their resume going to say?
Right, sure. So, yeah, first of all, in the search bar, actually, also, I can send you a video of how to find one if you email me at Nathan, N-A-T-H-A-N, at LarryGoins.com. I did recorded a video about this. So that could be helpful. In the search bar, you're going to type in real estate assistant, and in their profile, what you're really looking for is someone who says data mining or data scraping. Finding deals, finding leads, finding properties, right? Those are pretty much the keywords that you're looking for in their profile. And if you definitely send me an email and I'll shoot you over that link, I show you how I find, because I do more of the headhunter approach. I'll tell you what I mean by that. Some time ago, I used to be in the headhunting business industry. And basically what you do is you look for top talent and you steal them from other companies. So what I do is I look for VAs who are already working for another investor, and there's plenty out there. And I look at their job status and I look at how much money they have made for another investor, and I make sure the job is still in progress. Okay? So I look at the VA, I make sure their job is still in progress with that investor, and then I make sure they're still making money with that investor. All right? Like they've been making like over $5,000. Okay, so that means the investor likes them, they've been using them. If you're seeing their profile on Upwork and they're already working for someone else, that means they're open to more work. That means they have more time. So what I do is I go in and I try to get them for like 5 hours a week, okay, just a minimum. And then slowly by slowly I start bringing them over with either incentives and giving them more projects. And eventually I end up just paying them more than their competition. That's all I do. That's exactly what the best companies do in the world. They just recruit someone else by paying them more, find the best talent, and you know, give them better benefits. So if you really want to find great talent, you'd kind of want to follow that model because that's what the best companies in the world do.
Nathan, I have a question. My name is Sarah. How are you? So like,
I'm good. How are you, Sarah?
Yeah, hi. For the virtual assistants that help you to scrape, to check the leads from the Craigslist, usually, typically, I mean, how many leads are able to give you like in a week, typically?
That's going to vary by market. I wish I could give you a solid answer. It's going to vary by market. I could tell you, like, in Fayetteville, last week, we pulled out, I want to say it was 16 in a specific neighborhood that we were looking for. Because, remember, you're going to do a market, right? So I'm just going to say Fayetteville right now, okay? But remember,
okay.
If you don't want a certain part of Fayetteville or a certain part of neighborhood in all those leads, you're looking just for a certain neighborhood, then it's going to be reduced. So if all of Fayetteville had, let's say, 100 leads, but you really just want a certain part of that neighborhood or a certain part of the town or the city, then it might shrink down to about 10. So I can't give you a solid number. I wish I could, but every market's going to be different.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell you this. In the hottest markets, the hottest selling markets, you're probably not going to find a lot of motivated sellers selling on Craigslist.
Yeah.
I mean, they will be there, but most of the time they're going to work with an agent that an agent can get them top dollar. But in some of the hottest markets, San Francisco, Charlotte, and I can go on and on, Boston, the hottest markets, they will be probably be working with an agent.
Yeah, what I'm worried about is I hired this VA, and when I asked them to go check for the Craigslist, and there's really nothing. I'm just wasting my money paying for nothing.
well, if he, so he's not, the VA is not finding any leads?
No. I haven't had a VA yet, but that's what my question is. What if I have a VA that say, like you said, five hours and a week, and then he's not able to find any good leads because it's just not a lot.
All right, so you haven't tried it yet, right?
No, I haven't. Yeah, so I'm trying to ask.
Let me tell you something. Don't have a conversation or ask questions if you haven't tried it. And I'm saying that for your own benefit. I'm saying that, I tell this to anyone, by the way. Remember, all you're doing is you're wondering and guessing, and that can really stop someone from getting started or doing business or growing their business. So just remember, test it, try it out. If you don't like it, you just shut it off. You know what I mean? You just stop it right away. You're like, oh, you know what? This is not working. We'll just kill it. You know, just stop it. You know, but yeah, you know why I say that? I'm sorry, you said your name was Sarah, right? Sarah?
Yes.
Yeah, so Sarah, you know what? I deal with a lot of people who say, I don't want to make any offers because, you know, it seems like there's so much competition. I don't know if I should get started in this market, right? So they think about it way too much, right? So just get out there and do it and watch what happens. You know what I mean?
Okay, so I'll go ahead and email you information about, like, the job description, things like that, for me to try to hire a VA and try it out.
Actually, if you email me, I will send you, I think it's 72 listings and posts for VAs that for all different situations.
Okay.
So when I was directly in Larry's office, I actually helped him recruit a lot of these VAs. I think at one time we had like 15 virtual assistants. And I could do, there was a time in his company where I was creating the ads with Larry. I wrote a lot, some of the copy. He would write it. We'd work together. And I would post it. I'd find them. I'd screen them. I'd interview them and all this stuff. So I can actually send you a whole list of ads that you literally can copy and paste and use because they work. Those are the best ones. I think there's none of the bad ones are on there. Those are the good ones.
Thank you so much. I'm going to email you right now.
Sure, no problem.
Hey, Nathan,
right, so
can
we'll
you
take,
hear me?
Yeah, absolutely.
Great. Hey, I had a quick question. My name is Lisa. I had a meeting with, I hope we didn't cover this, I was a little late to the call, but I had a meeting with a gal that I thought would be a good private money investor. And I went in, you know, explained what I was doing and basically offered 10% annualized return on the money for the amount of time that I use it. And also a cherry, like if profit was $5,000 or less, a $500 cherry. If it was $5,000 or $1 or more, $1,000. And basically her response to me was that was not enough money. I pointed out that she's not making that in the stock market, nor at a bank. But
right.
What else could I have offered, I guess? I just... I thought it was greedy, frankly, because it's not just one deal. You know, we work well together. And this is someone I know who's watched me in business, and honestly, I felt, I don't know, what else, how could I have handled it better, I guess, maybe?
Sure. Well, that's a great question.
Go away.
Yeah, that's what I did, girlfriend. I just thought, I'm flushing you down the toilet.
Well.
But anyway, I want to. I'm sorry. I know that's pretty blunt.
No, but here's the thing. If they're not happy with 10%, and my private money people get the 10% and they get monthly payments. They're also on a note and a deed of trust as the note holder and everything through title. So at 10%, our private money people, anytime they sell stocks, bonds, CDs, are calling us and saying, we just cashed this in. What do you got? So that person's just being greedy, and nothing you do is going to be good enough for them We don't offer anything else, no other incentives. They're thrilled to death to get 10% on their money when they're getting 1% in the bank if they're lucky.
That's pretty much what I thought. Thank you.
Yeah, go away. Go away. No.
That's what I... Nathan, would you concur?
Yeah, depending on the depending on the working relationship that you have with that person. Yeah, I mean, to a degree, you're going to politely decline. And there, I don't know what your working relationship with is. You said you're pretty close to her. You've done business with her.
Business before. I was really shocked. I was like, okay, then you really aren't interested in the real estate market. So that's how I felt.
Right. Keep the relationship the way it is. And when she sees you're making a boatload of money and wants to get back in, say, listen, I told you the terms. Take it or leave it.
Thanks. Yeah. Thanks, girlfriend. That's pretty much how I felt. It's like, don't let the screen door slap you in the ass on the way out. Okay.
Oh,
right on.
Same thing, but I didn't want to say it on a multi-call here. Don't let the door hit you where the good Lord splits you. That's how we say it.
Okay, thank you very much, y'all. Thank you.
I would just say that, you know, depending on what you're trying to do and what kind of money you have, she may be interested in partnering like 50-50 on a deal with you or something to that effect in exchange for profits versus a percentage on the money.
Yeah.
So that might be,
No.
Always remember that some kind of money is better than no money. So you can either get a deal and share the profit, or you can get no deal whatsoever. It's always better to have the deal if that's your only way to get it, is to offer a percentage of the profit.
It's not enough money, it's not enough, and it's not enough, it's never going to be enough, and it's going to stress out the relationship. Find another money person.
Well, that was what when I offered the cherry on the profit, you know, I was trying to do that. I was trying to get her to share in the profit and see that incentive as well. So I don't know. I was. Yeah.
And give her all the money.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I would.
It was a real bummer. I mean, I really thought this was going to be solid for some deals, you know, so I was just, like, flabbergasted. I really thought I don't know.
You know what?
So.
When a person shows you who they are, believe them the first time.
Well said, well spoken. Oh, God, you're right. Okay. Thank you, everyone.
Yeah, you have a great night.
And you don't need the incentives just for future private money deals. You won't need it. Just use the rate. Let the rate carry the value, right? If you're topping on bonuses or extra incentives, that devalues the rate, and it just makes the rate seem like, oh, it's not as good. So one thing you can always ask people in private money, you just ask them, say, hey, what are you currently getting? And you know, if they're under the average, you know, 4, 6, whatever, you could always say, okay, well, if they're at 4, would you want to double that, you know, and get their response. But, let the rate hold the value. You don't need any incentives extra in private money.
Good lesson. I'm glad I learned that lesson on her. Thank you, Nathan.
Just another thing, because I know you said you're, you know, flabbergasted and all that. I'll tell you what, friends, family, business people and all that, just if you could, going into any other type of business deal, just drop the expectations way down, and you will be less disappointed. Literally,
understood.
Bring the expectations way down. Because the biggest time we get, you know, disappointed in life is when our expectations are really high.
Yep, I had a friend that used to say expectation equals suffering, and I get it now.
Okay.
Thank you so much, everyone.
You're welcome. Good luck.
I've had 3 different potential money lenders tell me they were making 17% in the stock market. Has nobody had that experience?
I know my girl isn't.
No.
From stock brokers?
No. From people who have their money in the stock market.
Well, you know what? As soon as the stock market takes a shit, call them back. Say, hey, how's your stock doing now?
Yeah, there's a lot of, there's actually, they're doing a lot of that right now. You're probably going to get a lot of calls from the brokers right now.
Yep, it's going to happen. It, just like real estate, just like stock market, I'm telling you, we're heading for it. It might not be like it happened before, but it's going to happen. Even the people on the stock channel, because we watch the stock channel, are saying it's due for an adjustment. As soon as it adjusts, call your people back. Say, hey, how's that going for you now? Yep. You want to jump back in at 10%? Because when they lose in the stock market, they're not losing $10 and $20. They're losing big money.
Yeah, true. There's no insurance in the stock market. So.
Oh, hell no. No, just bide your time. And you know what? Sometimes if you just have a conversation with people and you tell them, hey, you know, about how lousy the bank rates are, and get somebody engaged in a conversation about that. Those are the people. Those are the people. You got them all around you. You just got to find them.
So how do you go about initiating conversations of this type? I know a lot of people that would be great money lenders, but I've never had conversations about money with them.
Okay, so I, even though I've got a big mouth, as you can tell, I was always funny about talking to people about their money. I just didn't even go there. But I got my, this is a funny thing. You need to get cards made up, separate cards, and this is what I did. I got separate business cards that put my name in the middle, and underneath all I did was put private investor. And then in the right-hand corner,
you're a John Burley student.
I put my email. And then I put on this card, great rate of return, short and long-term rates available. Nothing about the numbers. I happened to meet a lady on the airplane from Burbank to Vegas. And then I was coming to Tucson. I gave her my card. She says, oh, are you a financial planner? I said, oh, no, honey, I'm not. And I explained to her what I do. And she said, I'm going to call you as soon as I get back from Tucson. I mean, as soon as I get back from Vegas, I'm going to call you. She had me come to her assisted living place. She's a multimillionaire. She can't give me her money fast enough. She says, here, will you take a check? I started her with 8%. But because she does a lot of these charitable gift annuities or something, where you never see the money again, but she wants that interest because she lives in an assisted living. Now, when I do a deal, she gets her money back. She's gotten 10% interest. Then she gets her money back. And then she goes, okay, so what else do you have? Can I buy another title? So you don't know where your money is, but older people, people that have self-directed IRAs, those people are clamoring for 10%. If you can get some of those, talk to people, say, hey, do you have a self-directed IRA? And if anybody tells you yes, say, how you doing with that? You know, I can offer you 10%. And their eyeballs will fall out of their head. So that's how we've gotten our private money. And we did a lot
You know, maybe you two should exchange numbers and talk separately. Nathan might have some other good answers.
I was just going to ask you. You're fun to talk to. What's your name? Can I get in touch with you?
Yeah.
How do I get in touch with you?
On the side, okay, while the rest of us ask questions to Nathan. Please.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, but you know what? I hear what you're saying. But do you have all the money you need to do the deal?
What's your name?
I actually do. That's why I would prefer that you two go have a conversation separately, and we can ask Nathan and the rest of us important questions while you two talk about what will work for you, which I think is wonderful.
What is your name? Can I get in touch with you?
Yeah, sure, honey. Let me just give you the number real quick so we don't interrupt.
Yes.
Been on the phone for an hour and 15 minutes. Okay.
Hey, sweetie, I want your number, too.
Okay. Just shouting it out there, 520-401-0924, and I'm Celie, C-E-L-I-E. Okay, there's that lady that needs to answer all the gets those questions answered. Let's
go. Okay. Does anybody have any other questions in regards to private money or anything like that? Any other questions?
Hey, Nathan.
Yes.
So I'll just weigh in here. I've been listening, and our sweet girl who's been weighing in her share tonight, which is great. I love it. My takeaway tonight is relationships. Building that buyer's list, making relationships, getting to know the people who have the money is paramount over everything we've talked about tonight, building that buyer's list. Yes?
Yeah, that's true. But, yeah, buyer's list, private money. Relationships is everything in real estate. One of the most important things you can do in your real estate business, whether you're wholesaling or any other strategy, is building what I like to call a power team. From your attorney to a title company to, if you're working with an agent, appraiser, right? There are going to be certain people, private money, hard money, there are going to be certain people in your business that you're going to need at a specific time, depending on the strategy you're doing. So if it's wholesaling real estate, yeah, you're going to want some good relationships with some cash buyers. Yeah, you may have a list of 100 cash buyers, but maybe you don't talk to them or you don't have a close relationship with all of them. Maybe you've gotten cards, or maybe you have a website that attracts them, or maybe you got a list. But out of the, let's say, 100, you're probably going to have a good solid, let's say, 10 or more. But there's going to be a solid group that you want to have a more tighter relationship with, and you want to be in touch with on a more regular basis.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Good.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, sure. Same, it comes with private money, too, by the way. Like, I know that, the topic of private money has come up. And I did share this on the previous call that I did. But there's a strategy that I learned from David Lindahl. He's raised over over $500 million for real estate. And when I used to work for him, he taught me a strategy. It's a very simple one. And because it's private security and not a public security, the only way to raise private money is through networking and building relationships. So one of the strategies that he taught me was to call two people every day consistently, whether it's 5 days a week or however many times you want to do it, but at least call two people every day and have a conversation. That doesn't mean that you know they have money, but it could be someone, it could be a friend, relative, doctor, attorney, whoever, right? You never know what they do. It doesn't really matter the profession that they have. But when you're talking to them, you're building a relationship, you get to know them, and then they're going to actually just ask about you and your life and what's going on with you, right? So if you show interest in other people, they're going to show interest in you. Well, when they ask you how are you doing and what's going on in your life, that's a great opportunity to start it off with the opportunity. You don't have to talk about, like, what's going on in your personal life and all that. I mean, you could, but you really want to start it when they ask you. You want to lead it back with the opportunity, saying, oh, well, I'm working on this deal, this, whatever, that thing you have going on to raise the money, right? So you would, in real estate, you would say, right now I'm looking for some investors to get in on this deal that I have or my next deal that I'm getting. And the way to ask the question is just like this. You just say, by the way, would you happen to know anyone? who would like to make a, you know, a higher percentage of interest. You don't want to state the interest, but you could say, hey, would you know anyone who wants to make maybe 8% or more on their money? Now, the important thing there is you ask the – he told me you ask the person behind them. That means you never ask someone directly, okay? You never ask someone directly, do you want to invest? Do you want to lend? Don't do that, because you, what you want to do is you want to – it's a human – it's built inside our human psyche. What you want to do is invoke interest. It's called invoking interest. So when you ask the person behind them, that only invokes interest, and now they feel like, oh, wait, what about me? Right? Does that make sense?
Yeah, you said that on your last last call.
Exactly. Oh, you heard the last call. So, yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah.
So if you heard the last call, yeah, it's exactly like that.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
It's good.
Yeah. You always want to ask them if they know someone. And then when they say, oh, I'm interested, you say, oh, really?
Right.
Oh,
right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Great, you know. So I would always, you know, ask the person behind them. Do you, you know, saying as an illustration, you'd say, you know, do you know someone? Yeah, and that invokes interest.
Nice.
And if you're consistent, just be consistent with it. If you get a plan for yourself, two people every day, and I still do this because most of my calls, like I said earlier, most of the time I'm on the phone and I'm on calls most of the day. I call those two people faithfully every day. And here's the cool thing: you're always getting referrals. So if you're always wondering like where to find private money, you're always getting referrals from those calls. Even if that person says, "Hey, I'm interested," well, that's great. Go over it with them, but say, "Hey, do you still happen to know two other people, right? Or know someone, right?" So you're always getting a referral from someone else. And that's ideally what you want. Now, there are other places you can get lists of people who have self-directed IRAs. You can go on the IRA cruise. You can be around, partner up with companies that offer IRAs or self-directed IRAs and be in those rooms and have a booth and all that stuff. You could do that also. But I'm just going off someone who has raised over $500 million, you know, in real estate, private money securities. So I'm just sharing what I do and what I learned from him. Just passing it on to you.
Thank you.
Hey, Nathan.
Yeah.
So give me your email address again, please. Nathan@LarryGoldman.com, right?
Yeah, it's Nathan. Yeah, so it's NathAn.
Yeah, LarryGoldman.com.
@LarryGoldman.com.
Good.
Awesome.
Nice.
All right. Do we have any other questions? Okay. Great. Well, it was great chatting with everyone today. Hope this session helped. And then I'll be in touch with everybody real soon. Have a great night.
Very good.
Good night.
Thanks so much, Nathan. Very good stuff. Thank you.
Thank you.
Awesome. Good night.
Thank you, Nathan. Have a good night.
You also. Good night. Thank you.